This is the Human Rights Report from the University of Arizona's chapter of Amnesty International. I'm Asia Philbin. Amnesty International is a human rights group, but today we want to talk about environmentalism. You may wonder what the human rights movement has in common with environmental activism. We will look at ways that these two activities are connected, but first we have some recent human rights news. India and Pakistan are actively planting landmines along their border, threatening an international trend against their use. In 1997, the Ottawa Mine Ban Treaty outlawed anti-personnel mines, but neither India nor Pakistan ratified the treaty. Amnesty International has called on both governments to end landmine use and join the global movement against weapons of indiscriminate destruction. Meanwhile, in Jamaica, on January 7th, a verdict exempted police officers from standing trial in the shooting death of Patrick Genius. Despite compelling evidence to the contrary, the court ruled that the officers acted in self-defense when they allegedly shot Genius in the back of the head. A noted pathologist reviewed the evidence and concluded that the killing fit the pattern of a deliberate incapacitation followed by execution. Amnesty International has called for the Jamaican government to challenge impunity for the police officers and to bring the killers to justice. That's the Human Rights News. I'm Asia Philbin. Now Jesse Bangu will talk about Amnesty International and the environment.
This is Jesse Bangu with the Human Rights Report. What does human rights have to do with environmentalism? On the most basic level, the United Nations tells us that every person has a, quote, right to a secure, healthy, and ecologically sound environment, unquote. So, a healthy environment is a basic human right. And defending the environment also defends the rights of the people who live there. But unfortunately, it sometimes works the other way too, when environmental destruction becomes a human rights abuse. This connection can also mean trouble for environmentalists, because those who destroy the natural environment are often not afraid to violate the rights of environmental defenders. Around the world, environmentalists have faced human rights abuses for protecting the natural world. They are routinely denied their freedom of expression and subject to threats, torture, or physical violence. Environmentalists have even been killed in the pursuit of their ideals. We spoke with Fulabi Ologjabu from Amnesty International's Human Rights and the Environment program. Fulabi informed us of several cases from Amnesty's files. But first, is there so much environmental destruction in the world? And if so, why? Environmental problems have increased significantly with the rise of the global economy. We've all seen environmental problems caused by companies in the United States, but poorer nations face a greater risk. Financially weak countries have conceded environmental protection in exchange for outside investment. Their governments have allowed profit-driven foreign companies to shape trade, labor, tax, and environmental policies. Often, these nations' poorest citizens are the most seriously affected, but they have little recourse against the powerful alliance of big business and the government. And when the common people do express their opposition to environmental destruction, they cannot adequately defend themselves. For example, a U.S. company currently leads a joint venture with the governments of Chad and Cameroon to build an oil pipeline through the two countries. ExxonMobil, Chevron, and Malaysia's Petronas plan to build a 1,500-kilometer pipeline from Chad's Doba oil fields to Cameroon's Atlantic coast at the expense of the environment, both countries' residents, and $35,365,000,000 from the World Bank. The interested parties claim the project is safe due to intensive human rights and environmental oversight. However, the safeguards have already proven to be faulty. Chad has used bonus money from the loan to buy weapons, furthering the oppression of pipeline opponents and in violation of the agreements. Already, over 200 anti-pipeline activists have been killed with no subsequent investigation. One member of Chad's parliament was even sentenced to 3 years in prison for opposing the pipeline.
The problem, one of the major problems we have is the way the project was started without any due consultation, proper consultation with the affected local communities. And people have complained that their lands have been seized with no due compensation, that police have been following the ExxonMobil officials whenever they go around. There seems to be a lot of intimidation that goes on with this project, and we are just, this is one of the projects where we are trying to avert catastrophe, because there's a big chance that this can become another Niger Delta.
Environmental danger areas include Cameroon's coastal forest, regional water sources, the indigenous Bukola people, and even Chad's richest food-growing area. Also, the companies have not released a spill response plan, which could seriously harm the Atlantic coast. The major problem is that the Oversight Committee is responsible only to the Chadian government, who has a vested interest in the pipeline. But the committee itself is flawed because its voting procedure gives the government a controlling majority. As a result, human rights abuses occur with impunity. But still, despite the obvious dangers, civil organizations continue to monitor the project. ExxonMobil supports their involvement in the project and describes their financial support of the new Foundation of Environment and Development in Cameroon. They have also held consultation sessions with Cameroon's Bukola people.
And I'm sure the company will say they've done a lot of consultation, but who are they consulting with and under what circumstances? When you go to a country like Chad, into communities that have traditional fear of the police and the army, and you come there as a representative of ExxonMobil with police in tow, you can imagine the fear, the level of fear that is in the community, and how this will prevent them from saying what they really believe.
Moving from Chad and Cameroon to the west, we have all heard that Nigeria has suffered pollution, then over 2,000 deaths through the combined efforts of the Nigerian government and Royal Dutch Shell. The oppression of Nigeria's Ogoni people culminated in the execution of environmentalist Ken Saro-Wiwa in 1995. Things have not changed much since then. In January 1999, U.S.-based Chevron provided helicopters and boats to the Nigerian military to fight oil protesters. The ensuing attack left 13 dead. The Nigerian consulate in New York refused to discuss the issue, canceling a meeting with local activists on April 2nd, earlier last year.
Our activists went to the Nigerian consulate in New York, and in the typical manner of Amnesty, nonviolent, in a very respectful manner, went there to dialogue with the Nigerian consulate and the officials there, but they were thrown out.
Chevron rates their commitment to the environment as exemplary, citing the support of the Worldwide Fund for Nature and their donations to the Nature Conservancy. They also gave their support to human rights by endorsing the Global Sullivan Principles, originally established by Reverend Leon Sullivan, as a framework for corporate social responsibility. Amnesty International responds positively to the Sullivan Principles, but asks corporations to go beyond this minimum and be more aware of the potential conflict between increased profit and protection of human rights. Also, the Sullivan Principles focus on the rights of their own employees more than the communities adversely affected by their operations. Meanwhile, on this continent, American paper company Boise Cascade made a deal with the government of Mexico, forcing paper mills in the state of Guerrero to increase production. In this environmentally fragile region, the resulting rapid deforestation threatened to increase soil erosion, among other serious ecological concerns. After farmers reported decreased crop yields, local campesinos organized protests against the logging. They disrupted Boise Cascade's operations over the next several years, forcing them to leave Guerrero in 1998. However, the struggle was not over for two local anti-logging activists, Rodolfo Montiel Flores and Teodoro Cabrera Garcia. These men were tortured until they signed blank confessions. Last August, they were sentenced to 6- and 10-year jail terms, based on the forced confessions of guerrilla activity and drug possession. Although Mexico's National Commission on Human Rights has confirmed that Montiel and Cabrera were illegally detained and tortured, their judge rejected two legal appeals. Rodolfo Montiel has won the Chico Mendes Award for Environmental Heroism and the Goldman Prize, the world's largest award for grassroots environmentalism. Thousands of human rights activists have written to the Mexican government supporting Mr. Montiel and Cabrera and asking for their release. Mexican President Vicente Fox informally supported the two men, but his administration officially recommended a guilty verdict to the judge. Finally, on November 8th, both men were released from prison on humanitarian grounds. But their guilty verdict remains on record. They are currently seeking justice for the crimes committed against them. Human rights defenders got involved and faced similar problems. The Mexican human rights group, PRODE, has faced intimidation and attacks, especially after they took on the case of Montiel and Cabrera. Their offices were broken into, and some evidence destroyed. One of the lawyers, Digna Ochoa y Placido, was threatened, then tortured, on August 9, 1999. On October 19, 2001, she was killed in her Mexico City office. The international human rights community was shocked by this loss. On November 9th, Mexican Consul Carlos Flores told us that Mexican President Vicente Fox is committed to supporting the investigation into her death, but that it is under the jurisdiction of Mexico City, not the federal government. However, there has been no progress in the investigation thus far, as the City Attorney General, Bernardo Batiz Vasquez, appears unwilling to pursue the case. Ochoa's brother, Jesus, claims that Mexico's intelligence service, CISIN, closely monitored his sister and probably knows who killed her. Batiz's office has requested information from them, but has received nothing of value in return. This case has seriously marred President Fox's claims that he would improve Mexico's poor human rights record as a major focus of his administration. The only good news is that the struggle has yielded some results in Guerrero. Last November, Mexico's environmental prosecutor suspended logging in 7 communities, including the one where Adolfo Montiel came from. This case is only one example of a large corporation using its power to weaken international regulations. Amnesty International is working with other groups to promote greater corporate transparency, especially in the area of labor, human rights, and the environment. The goal of this program, called the International Right to Know, would require multinational corporations that are based in the United States to disclose their human rights and labor practices along with the environmental impact of their operations. This would give the public the information they need to defend their natural environment and their basic human rights. This initiative does not require any specific code of conduct, and in fact is based on existing domestic right to know laws. The plan would require companies to report on toxic pollutants and emissions, as well as the amount of natural resources extracted abroad. But the plan also has a human rights component. All U.S. companies would have to disclose all human rights policies and security arrangements they have made with police, military, or paramilitary forces in the host country. Other components require companies to reveal labor standards, hazardous chemicals, and health and safety reports, as we would be required by OSHA in the U.S. The labor requirements would also include full disclosure of all facilities operating in other countries.
A broad coalition of human rights, environment, and labor groups have been organizing around a set of initiatives called the International Right to Know Campaign, which we are trying to promote as a legislation in the Congress that will hold multinational corporations like Chevron accountable for the impact of their operations on human rights, environmental, and labor practices around the world.
Finally, to ensure compliance, the program includes monitoring and enforcement provisions which allow governments and private citizens to prosecute and collect damages when violations occur.
Within the international right to know, trust legislation is an enforcement mechanism whereby the government can sanction companies that are failing to disclose this information or are not disclosing proper information that they ought to be disclosing, and there's also a mechanism for individual lawsuits.
For more information on Amnesty's work supporting environmental action, including the International Right to Know program, look at www.amnestyusa.org/justearth. That's www.amnestyusa.org/justearth. Read about these and other environmental danger areas where human rights are violated. Make sure you sign the petition supporting the International Right to Know program while you are there. Thanks to Vlabi Olagjibu, Director of Amnesty International's Human Rights Environment Program, and Asia Philbin from the University of Arizona's Amnesty International chapter. Amnesty International is an independent human rights organization working for fair trials, ending torture, abolishing the death penalty, and freeing those who have been imprisoned solely for their beliefs. This has been the Human Rights Report, produced by the University of Arizona's Amnesty International chapter. I'm Jesse Bangu.